fans, we are here with, and I love this, the Chief Spaghetti Untangler, Lorraine Aho. And I almost messed that up, but we won't talk about that. Okay, we're starting with the speed round, Lorraine. When I say fraud, what do you think of?
Evil.
Okay. Ethics?
Good.
I like that. And then finally, who makes a better embezzler, men or women?
Better embezzler, women.
And why do you say that?
Women can be more sneaky and manipulative.
This is so interesting because I don't always ask my little speed round questions, but lately all of the answers have been women because that hashtag never underestimate a woman, AKA Gladys. But they just, we are socialized to think that women don't do that. And it's ridiculous. Like, it's just, and we think Gladys, who sits in the basement of the dentist's office, who could blow the dentist's office up tomorrow, wouldn't be smart enough to do it or wouldn't need to do it. And that's just, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
So I've been doing this for a really long time, and I have had a lot of women embezzlers that I've investigated. And at least early on, maybe not so much now, but early on it was women of a certain age had been underpaid, and they were passive aggressive, and they really felt like they were entitled. They were just as good as and as smart as and needed the money, or felt like they needed the money and felt like they had just been under the thumb of, you know, the man for a really long time. And so they're like, fine, I'm not going to ask for a raise. I'm going to be the good soldier, and I'm going to be funding my retirement out the back door. I'm going to be taking what's mine. The only way I know how, because I'm not going to confront you and tell you that I've got great skills and I need a raise. They're just going to work for minimum wage their entire career, and you don't realize that they've just funded their children's private school and the trip to see the Pope and the cruises and the, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. It's huge. And in the area I am in, Northern California, it's a very expensive place to live and wages are really low. So what do you get? You know, you have that
rationalization pressure. Yeah,
exactly. The unmet need of, you know, all my friends are going to, you know, their kids are going to private school. They all have fancy cars. And yeah. And again, it's the pressure, the rationalization and zero internal controls, because the business owners are like, but they were like family. She was like my mom. She, you know, I didn't think I needed to not give her a stack of blank signed checks when I went away for 6 months. And that actually was a real case with a psychologist, left his secretary a stack of blank signed checks and said, well, you know what to do with those. And she did. She absolutely knew what to do with those.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So Lorraine and I actually finally met in person last summer at the fraud retreat. Fraud retreat. We're hoping Lorraine's going to be there this summer, and hey. I'm hosting the little after hours. But we also have another connection because you went to school in my home state of Oregon at Oregon State University.
So I am a Beaver believer.
So how do you get from a bachelor's in communications to the Chief Spaghetti Untangler?
That's a great question, Kelly. It took a lot of years, and I did not know what I wanted to do with myself. And I got my degree in speech communications because I wanted to graduate. And my counselor said, well, let's figure out what we can shove you into. And that was it. And I enjoyed it a lot and learned how to read poetry really well. And Then I worked for small businesses, a lot of family-owned businesses, a lot of small businesses, and some tech startups, and got a real good sense of what worked and what didn't work and how people could actually take what wasn't theirs. And then I decided to become a bookkeeper because I was really interested in, you know, that, and my brain kind of works that way. My very first job was for a nonprofit, and the executive director was embezzling, and I found it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what I have to do for my life. I don't know what this is called. This was a long time ago. And before even really forensic accounting was a thing, but I knew that was juicy. And, you know, my dad was in law enforcement. So I'm like, I got this. I know this. I can do this. And I had to figure it out and say, well, what did I just do? And how do I keep going?
Yeah.
So I did. And then went back to school, got my accounting credits, passed the CPA exams, became a CFE actually first, CPA later.
Can't pass again. I've never passed in the first place. Never took it in the first place. So lately you have been posting a lot on LinkedIn, and everything you post, I'm like, you go girl, because there is no filter. Well, there probably is a filter, but it's probably even worse. But I mean, I'm known as no filter. I had a lawyer once tell me it was too transparent, and I'm like, oh, you mean too honest? But I love what you've been posting. And before we started recording, I sent to Lorraine a story about an embezzler in the great city of Portland, Oregon, who stole $800,000. I will put the link in the show notes. And new hashtag I have today, hashtag no one steals to pay a lawyer. He spent all the money, so he went to get a public defender, but Multnomah County doesn't have enough public defenders, so the case has been kicked to the curb. What are your thoughts on that, Lorraine?
Portland needs to get its priorities straight. They need to start hiring some public defenders, and I think that's a really bad precedent to set, and to, because then everyone's going to, spend all their money, not have money for a lawyer, rely on public defenders, and there won't be any. And that, with the hopes that they're, you know, never going to get prosecuted. In my LinkedIn post, I think I said very clearly, if you don't get prosecuted, you don't get a record, you can get rehired somewhere because it doesn't show up. You know, just don't use them as a reference. Use your buddy who pretends to be, you know, right? So
Vandalay Industries, Seinfeld.
I love that. And the Human Fund. So this does say that they didn't kick it all the way out. It was dismissed. They're planning to refile the indictment. So that's the good news. But man, that just prolongs it, right? So in the meantime, where is he working? In the meantime, you know, he's out there probably doing it again, maybe embezzling to then pay for a lawyer or put in his retirement fund once he gets out of prison so he can have something. I don't know where he's from, if he's got relatives out of state or out of the country that he can start shipping money to. I see that a lot. So they say they spend it, but they actually are sending it offshore.
Well, and then what about the victim? The victim sees this. They're like, we are a legitimate company. We have lots of, you know, clients. We have lots of employees. We pay our taxes. Oh my God. So you said your dad was in law enforcement.
Yes.
Obviously law enforcement. One of the things, and I was on a ski lift chair with a doctor from the Bay Area, and he said he got ripped off, and the cops were like, yeah, we're not touching it. And he even had hired someone to help him. And it left clearly such a bad taste in his mouth. And law enforcement is stretched really hard right now, like even more so. And it's like, if there's no blood,
And there's numbers. And numbers are confusing.
Yeah.
And numbers, yeah. So, yes. And with police being tasked to do more social services and financial crimes are falling, investigators are falling to the wayside because people who I know is people who have been trained as financial crimes investigators, they get pulled out of that because they need to be in the jail doing security or they need to be doing something else and they need to be on the street. So it is hard. And I think in one of my LinkedIn posts, I said the law enforcement that came up to one of my victims and said, well, she probably needed to feel pretty. That's why she charged all her hair and makeup and nails to the company credit card. And this was a small children's nonprofit and she did not need to feel pretty for the children. Just saying, yeah. But he was trying to discourage them from filing. And the sad part with that one is after we actually did get it filed because we did it pro bono and we did the report, got it to the district attorney. And they even said, thank goodness that you guys did that because otherwise it would just be out there. A previous victim came forward and said, well, you know, she embezzled from us too. And we just never bothered to fill out a report. So instead, the catch and release, what I was talking about, they didn't file a report. She goes out into the world, gets another job doing the exact same thing, embezzling the same way. And again, I think you pointed out with this one, this guy embezzled so quickly, you knew he had done it before, right? He just jumped in. It's like, oh, I know how to do this. I see that internal control is gone. And that's what this woman at this nonprofit did, hopped from one to the other. And that company had gone out of business, so she couldn't use them as a reference. There was nobody. I think she might not have even said she had used to work there. And they had just assumed that, you know, their previous person was fabulous. They just thought whoever they hired was going to be fabulous. They didn't really do much of a background, although even if they had, I don't know that they would have found anything. And that's the sad part is when there's not a record and we're a mobile society too. So when you get a record in a county on the East Coast, it's not going to necessarily follow you to, to Oregon. You know, is somebody, a small nonprofit in Oregon, going to do a deep dive background check to find every single county in the country or the world for that matter? We, like I said, we're a very mobile society. People are coming and going.
Well, and this year in the ACFE report to the nations, again, it shows background checks. The percentage has gone up, but part of that is COVID, work from home, remote. They're like, oh, well, we better check them if we don't actually see them in our office every single day. But there, you know, there is no one database about, you know, arrests and convictions. There's not. And a small business. So I have a friend who has a friend who has been caught embezzling. Mm. And my friend just found out that she's actually working at a place where she's in the finance. And her punishment from the one embezzlement was you can't touch money. Well, she's touching money again. And so my friend is going to confront her and say, I can't. I know you're doing this. Like, you can't do it. You were ordered not to do it. But the system can't track her.
Right.
Like, it's just, so we have the, you know, trust is not an internal control. And we were saying before the show that, like, you know, these aren't scary looking people. They look like you and me.
Right.
And we have so many biases that if someone shows up in their, you know, Dodge Caravan or their, you know, I don't know, and they've got two kids and their kids play, you know, volleyball and softball, they got to be a good mom. And they might be a good mom, but they've got this other part of them. So you've seen some of my presentations before, and it's like the whole confession. What is your confession rate?
What is my confession rate?
Yeah, when you go and you confront, interrogate, interview a potential, you know, perpetrator, do they give it up?
So I don't. I usually get the case from the attorney after it's already been, it's already down that road, but they always have excuses. So they're not going to confess it, but they're going to rationalize it instantly. Well, I've never done it before. Or I needed it. It was a one time. I was going to pay it back. I grabbed the wrong credit card out of my wallet. Yeah, there was cash and I just, it just like came out of my hands. I don't know. Mostly it's nobody was watching is the truth. I did it because I could.
Well, and then, and we both, no victim shaming, you have the business owner who may have played a little fast and loose with his own checkbook.
Yes. Tone and, at the top.
Yeah, tone at the top. Yeah, tone at the top. And they use that rationalization. It's like, you know, the business owner took their family to, you know, Key West for that root canal conference and gave me the $20,000 Black American Express. And I know they took their family and they want me to pay the whole thing. And my kid can't even go to outdoor school for $200.
Absolutely. Yep. We see a lot of that. Like I said, especially in this area where it's a very expensive place to live, there's a lot of money out there. But the person didn't earn it. It's not theirs. They're trusted to care for it, not to be spending it on themselves. And yeah, and they feel in their heads like it's a very fine line. Like, well, I earned it. I work my butt off and they don't get appreciated for it. Yeah, there's a lot of that, especially with the women, is that I'm not appreciated.
Yeah. So do you have one case you want to talk about that really either stopped you in your tracks or you still think about it? It didn't end like you wanted it to. Do you have it's like a favorite child?
I do. And it's recent and I have to be kind of careful, but it was a nonprofit. And we got called by the board of directors president. And she said, I want to know how long it's been going on. And I want to know who all was involved. And we started and I was contacting her and she said, well, you know, I got bullied out. She said, I'm not president anymore. They bullied me out. And so I had to find the new president. I'm like, okay, are we still going? Do you still want us to do this? We had to haul archive boxes from their storage shed because it wasn't secure. And I said, well, these are going to disappear. So I want to lock them down. And we went back 20 years and it was way over $1 million. And it was the largest collusion I have ever seen. It was one person was very controlling. It was a woman, very controlling. It was her little domain. And she would either indoctrinate you and have you help her and for in return to learning how to do it. Or she would bully you and say she was going to get you fired if you squealed, if you said anything. And it... Yeah, 20 years. And she was named, you know, business person of the year and everybody loved her. And she had this public face. And then what was really happening? And there was, I guess, a negotiated settlement. I don't think it ever went to trial. And they negotiated down to maybe a $50,000 restitution. And she turned around and she got the exact same job with another nonprofit up the street doing the same thing. And, you know, I want to pick up the phone so badly and say, I probably should do a little, you know, if you're going to forgive and hire, great, but make sure your internal controls are super strong and make sure they do not touch the money. Like you were saying with that other person. And that's really almost impossible because they will, that's their job 24/7. That's all they're thinking about is their vice, right? They get hooked. It's an addiction to taking what's not theirs. It's like shoplifting, you know, it's a, they've got to get a high off of it somehow.
And yeah.
Anyway, that one still haunts me because it was not what I was hoping for. And I remember sitting in the board meeting with the board members discussing whether or not to take it public, to take the information public and tell the donors, hey, this is what we found. This is what happened. We're going to lock it down. It's never going to happen again. Don't worry. No, shoved it under the carpet. Never said a word, never owned it. Didn't ever say anything about it, except came back and said, well, the economy is really bad. We need $1 million from you donors. And the donors started to like open their wallets and then said, this doesn't smell right. Something's wrong. And so withheld the money and the nonprofit went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And it was so sad. That's just me. That's personally, I just feel like if they had come forward and said, man, this happened under a lot of people's watches, there's a lot of people culpable for this and we're stopping it right now. And just owning it. And they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. I mean, I always wanted my victims to, you know, go to law enforcement. Sometimes I understood, but at the same time, I knew they were most likely going to be very disappointed in the process because it takes too long. It's not CSI 1 hour.
Right.
You know, sometimes you need a lawyer during all of this. Sometimes the business can't afford a lawyer, which is really hard. But let's get on the positive side of this.
Okay.
I always think there is a silver lining for victim and perpetrator. I've seen victims whose business has just hockey sticked up after they stopped the bleeding. I have seen perpetrators who have changed their lives, absolutely changed their lives. So do you have a silver lining for any of your stories?
So I've not seen a perpetrator change, but I do have the flip side of the nonprofit story. There was another, almost at the exact same time, another nonprofit who had a similar situation, didn't happen for as long a period, but they called the police and they called the press immediately and said, this is the name of the person. This is what they did. This is who we are. And we are stopping it. We are announcing it. And it was a horrible thing. And this is what we're doing to change. And it will never happen again. And we still need your donations. And they're doing great. They have turned the corner. They actually, like you said, stopped the bleeding. And they're doing really well. So it's funny that those two flip things happened at almost the exact same time. So
yeah.
That was nice. And you know, it's not a cure-all to call the press, but I just think when you're working with other people's money, OPM, other people's money, you owe them a responsibility because you're trying to care for their donations, that you owe them a duty of transparency and say, wow, that happened and it did happen. And Lisa won't happen that way again because we fixed it.
Sunlight is the best disinfectant. Okay. This is my, you guys can't see it, but it's my surprise and delight little tag that just a great friend client sent to me. So for helping businesses recover, or, you know, I just was talking to someone about doing a speaking engagement and they're like, we want to be more proactive. And I was like, yeah, well, the problem is this world of fraud is a little reactive.
Yes.
But yeah. So what do you tell your clients or potential clients how this doesn't happen? As an accountant, what do you tell potential clients to stop it?
And I did a whole Rotary Club speech not that long ago on locking your damn hen house door because you have no control that the fox is hungry. You have no control that the fox has learned how to, like, you know, crawl up and be sneaky around your chickens. All you can control is locking the hen house door. So internal controls, nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to, you know, I used to talk about it all the time. Nobody cares until it's already happened, right? So I try to look at, you know, their vulnerabilities. And there's usually a lot more than one. It's usually layers and layers of different ways people can take your money. And yeah, it really depends on how many people you have working for you. And Reagan, thank you, Reagan, trust but verify, you know, yeah, I trust you. Absolutely. And we stick to the policy of two people sign every check, or, you know, I get sent the bank statements directly to my house, whatever. Stick to the policy and don't make it personal. And I think that's the hardest thing with small business owners. They get very personally involved in their employees, which is awesome. It's nice to have like a family, you know, atmosphere. But again, stick to the policy. I love you. Let's say happy birthday. And the policy is this. We can't stray from the policy.
Well, and you have to be consistent. There's so much wiggle room. And the higher up someone is, there's even more wiggle room in my experience.
Yes. We've had a lot of partner embezzlements where they're at a level of, yeah, I'm a partner. I can do whatever I want. It's like, yeah, you can't really, but they think they can. And the other partners, it's hard for them to see it or stop it really when you're all at the same peer level.
Well, and that's a case where law enforcement, in my experience, when it's a partnership, something like that, they're like, it's civil.
Right.
They're like, this is civil. Get your, you know, white shoe law firm lawyers involved and we're not going to deal with it. Then the other thing, and I don't know if you had this experience, is no one wants to be audited by the IRS or the state. And when a business gets embezzled and the cops come in and say, we want your books, they're like, oh, all of them?
Which set?
Yeah, which set? Like, do you want the ones where I write off my spouse's car and my kid's apartment because he does some social media for me? Like, it's intimidating. Like, it's worse than an audit because, and so I think a lot of people at that point are just like, you know what? We're just going to take care of this, like, you know, civilized human beings. And that means no law enforcement and Gladys is going to go down the street.
Right. And I tell people that, you know, normal audits are like an eye exam. My investigations are like a colonoscopy. I go all the way up into the dark. I'm going to look at everything and I'm not going to necessarily judge you because that's not my job. But my job is to look at, and we get a lot of this with marital disillusions with spouses who own their own businesses. And man, we've got a lot of those right now. And it just checks off the boxes. Okay, fine. Let's normalize your income. I'm not judging you. I'm not doing a tax audit. I'm not going to turn you into the IRS because you got your girlfriend on payroll. But I am going to look at your actual income with all of that taken out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love fraud and pop culture and I love podcasts and books and movies and stuff like that. Is there any like pop culture that you looked at and said, oh, they got that so right. Or, oh, they got that so wrong. Or like, I recommend, the new series, The Gentleman, have you watched that?
I haven't. My husband loves it, though. He's so
Fred Ward. Talk about a dysfunctional family and lots of money and stuff like that. You should watch it.
Okay, I will.
But what are your recommendations? Do you have any recommendations or like, oh, God, like the Pink Collar Crimes on CBS? That's a don't waste 8 hours of your life. I did.
Man, the last thing I watched was American Nightmare Gone Girl. One of the attorneys is somebody I work with and I know him very well. And that it was really interesting to see his take on that, and how law enforcement can fail you and save you both, depending on the human behind the badge and what they're willing to do and staying curious. You know, the law enforcement that saved them, she was stayed curious enough to keep going until she got the answers.
Yeah. So, trainings, we met at Fraud Retreat last year. Do you have some trainings or so the, your episode's going to drop, I believe, the week of what is today? Oh my gosh. I am so out
it's
of
the 9th, April 9th.
The 9th. So yours should drop the week of the 16th, but the week of the 9th was, I interviewed the two women whistleblowers for The Big Con on, Netflix about the largest Social Security disability ripoff ever. It's a fascinating episode. If you guys haven't listened to it, you got to listen to it because it's amazing. And a lawyer is involved, and they actually communicate with him, even though it's just kind of crazy. But as far as like trainings or books or things like that, is there anyone you specifically like recommend to the audience? Because the audience is always looking for resources.
Oh, wow. So I just signed up for one with the Accountants Attorney Alliance, I think. That sounded really interesting. And they are going to be talking about, is it uncovering hidden income and assets in marital dissolutions, which is exactly what a bunch of cases I'm working on right now. So that should be good. And then I do a lot of ACFE. AICPA, you know, they have a different focus. They're not really up on fraud techniques, but ACFE is just on it. They have some great trainings.
What about AI and ChatGPT? Have you found any use for it in your practice so far to date?
Not so far. So I did try to do a blog using ChatGPT, and I posted about it because I had a complete meltdown, and the amalgamation, the consolidation of the information, I found really boring and not necessarily correct. And that's actually why I started blogging so much on LinkedIn, was I wanted to get the stories out, because AI does not have the personal connection. They don't have the stories. They don't have the empathy. They don't have the experience. It's just pablum. It's like somebody threw up in your mouth a bunch of fraud statistics. I don't know. And I don't like it. So that's how, and I'm posting poetry too, because I'm like, you got to think, people, you got to think. And fraud examination takes every brain cell, and you have to see patterns, and you have to, you know, it's the same as reading poetry, I think, is looking at the big picture, but taking out every single word and saying, why did they choose that? And why did they do that? And why did they move that money over here? I don't know. I see a lot of the same challenges for reading poetry and detangling fraud.
There's a behavioral scientist, economist named Eddie Klotz, and he talks about removing things. What is missing? And I was just talking with someone the other day, and I said, we're looking at this wrong. We need to know what is missing. And so often it's like, what is the missing thing? And if it's a perpetrator, what is missing? It might be that their spouse left them, that their kid is in jail, that, you know, like the guy who stole from the Collins Street Bakery, you know, he was missing social acceptance. And you mentioned earlier in the podcast about the woman who took her family to see the Pope, Patricia yes. Smith. And I actually communicated with her in prison briefly, and then she kicked me off. but she said she never felt like a good enough mother or you know, daughter, and that she worked with a very wealthy family. And she, everyone thinks money cures all. They just, it's, and Daniel Kahneman, who just died, Nobel Prize winner, he's like, money does make you happy, but only to a point. And I don't know, that was a long whatever, but like, the what is missing? I like to look for what is missing in, you know, what is missing in the victim business, internal controls. What is missing in the perpetrator? Psychologically, like, there's something missing, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's, you know, FOMO. They want to take their family to wherever. Oh, I have a good one. When I first started, I met somebody who had worked for a company. Let's see. It was a small business in Northern California. And the longtime bookkeeper was like a mother to everybody, invited the office to her daughter's wedding. Well, her daughter's wedding was this huge blowout affair at the local country club. No holds barred, everything, you know. And the guy was like, wow, I know her husband doesn't make that much. And I know I don't pay her that much. How the heck is she affording this? Is a better wedding than I could give my daughter? Well, because she used his credit card and she, you know, embezzled everything from him. So he couldn't pay for his daughter's wedding. And yeah, she has the cojones to invite him to the wedding that he paid for and he didn't even know he paid for.
Well, hopefully he got the miles.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
So, you know, the missing I am, money makes me a better person. Money makes me, you know, socially acceptable. Whatever is that piece. You're right. It's society too. It's, you know, I got to blame some of our culture on constantly wanting something bigger and better and more expensive, and we're not working for it.
Well, I had a dentist who, of course, was a woman dentist, but she got ripped off. And she goes, you know, this person, she actually bought a nicer washer dryer than me. And at the time she goes, I'm like, I'm the dentist. How is she affording the like nicest washer dryer? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you how she's affording it.
Right.
So, okay, Fraudish fans. So I like to end with this question, but I forget sometimes. What haven't I asked you today, Lorraine, that you want to tell the audience?
Oh, well, we said lock up the hen house, do background checks. Don't be afraid of telling people that something has happened. Do not be afraid. Find somebody. Call me. Call somebody who is a sympathetic that can you can tell your story to, that maybe we can lead you in the right direction on how to fix it. Don't, you know, if you can't get any headway with law enforcement or an attorney, find somebody, because there's going to be somebody out there that can help you.
That goes to, which I wrote down earlier and we didn't talk about, was trauma-informed care. And I hope that you speak next year at Fraud Retreat about trauma-informed care. And I joke, I'm the fraud therapist. I'm cheaper than a lawyer. Yeah. But we are. Because
yes.
We really are. They know we've done it.
Yes.
And we know what to say. That isn't just blah, blah, blah.
Yes. And a lot of people tell me, thank you so much for listening to me. Thank you for believing me, because some of the stories are pretty incredible. And thank you for not mansplaining me, because I, you know, there's historically was a lot of male fraud examiners who maybe didn't have the empathy.
Yeah, I have a client who she was on her way to check herself into a psychiatric facility because no one would believe her. And I answered her email and I didn't know it. She didn't tell me until a couple of years later, but she's like, no one would believe me. My husband didn't believe me. Cops didn't believe me, you know? And she goes, I was literally ready to drive myself to check into a psychiatric ward, and you answered my email. So we do good work. And it's important. So thank you, Lorraine, and I hope to see you this summer.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks for inviting me.